Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, we've got an excellent, excellent show for you today. And in fact, I confess, I'm going to do a lot of listening today. I put my two cents in on a lot of the financial topics that I have and when I have a guest. But today I'm very interested in learning about the subject because I will confess it's not something I deal with every day, but it affects our financial system in a big way. And the subject is the repo market. What in the world am I talking about? Well, on the line with me is Scott Skirm, and he is the author of a couple of books. Rogue Traders is one book, and then we've got The Money News, and we'll get into a little bit about those and what they're about. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, David. I'm very happy to be back.
Wow, welcome back. And as my listeners know, Scott, if you're not good, you don't come back. So
yeah, that's good to know.
You're back. So
okay,
that's excellent. But just a quick rundown on Scott's background and experience, very wide and deep experience, as they call it. But Scott's one of the leading figures in the repo and securities financial markets today. He's been a very well-respected former trader, salesman, trading desk manager, global business head in fixed income securities, worked on Wall Street for over 22 years at very well-respected organizations, Bank of Tokyo, ING, and several other well-respected organizations, BANMS in economics, so doubling up on the economics education. And he's been regularly quoted in the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, Bloomberg, Reuters. I mean, cool stuff. So, and the first book published back in 2013 was The Money News. And then later, 2014, April, Rogue Traders. So lots more information about these books for Scott at scottskirm.com, S-K-Y-R-M.com. And of course, those books are also available on Amazon.com as well. So here's why I wanted Scott on. We hear about these banks and some of the things that go on and, you know, the financial institutions. And, you know, Scott, people hear about the Fed. Some people really are clear about what that is. And then a lot of people don't know what the Fed is and the Federal Reserve. And there's this whole other world that most people on Main Street don't even know is part of Wall Street or part of, you know, that whole conglomeration of financial institutions. And so this repo market has, as I'm sure you're going to help us understand, has a big impact, but we don't have any idea, because if you ask people what's a repo, that's what happens when you don't make your car payment.
Yeah, exactly. And the TV shows on the repo markets, you know, some big burly guys with tattoos breaking in and stealing people's cars and returning them to the bank. So, you know, at the top of people's head when they hear about repo, you know, or that movie of the 1980s, I think. And it's really interesting, too, because the repo market is one of the largest financial markets in the world. Just in the United States, I think the last statistic I saw on the repo market was that the size was $4.5 trillion, which, of course, it's easy to throw around, you know, big numbers like that. It easily gets lost. But the most important thing about the repo market is that it's the financial plumbing of the investment industry. So, you know, there's been times when people say that the banking system is the engine that drives the economy of the U.S. Well, the repo market is kind of the oil that lubricates the engine that drives the economy.
Okay, so give us so we can get that burly, half-dressed, sweaty guy breaking in your house, taking your keys to, or just hauling your car away. Get that image out of their mind.
Right.
What is give us an example of repo. Give us an example of these instruments or what they are. Give us that basic start there.
So repo is kind of a general term, and it's short for repurchase agreement or repurchase transaction. Also sometimes called, the opposite is a reverse repo transaction. And that sounds really complicated, but technically what it is if I lend you a security today,
okay,
you promise to return that security back to me tomorrow.
Okay.
Or if you lend me your cash today, I'll give you a security that you return in a week. So basically, it's a very short-term collateralized loan.
Well, now why don't they just call it that? Short-term collateralized. It's an IO. It's a short-term IOU backed by collateral.
Exactly.
Okay,
and
I like that better.
Exactly what it is. Now, you know, it depends on how deep you want to dive into it, but there's all sorts of legal and bankruptcy reasons why it's set up as a buy and a sell. In other words, a sale and a repurchase. So
it helps to protect the parties involved.
Exactly, and actually, I mean, if you want to get into the weeds just a little bit, we'll stick our toe into the weeds on that one.
That's good.
That one of the key facets of the repo market is that if your counterparty declares bankruptcy, you can immediately liquidate your security.
You get to keep your half of the deal.
Exactly. So that's been really important the last, say, 20, 30 years when banks or other financial institutions have gone bankrupt, is that their counterparties, the other people in the repo market, you know, cash investors or people with securities, have been able to get their securities back right away when there's a bankruptcy. And that's really what drives the whole liquidity aspect of the repo market.
And Scott, is it usually done? You mentioned I'll give you back what I took from you. You know, I give you cash. You give me a security. I'll give you back your cash. You give me back my security, and I'm going to give you some interest for the period of time that I've borrowed that money with this short-term IOU.
Exactly.
Okay. Is that the main one of the main functions that you accomplish? Is basically this short-term financing strategy?
Right. Exactly. So that's kind of the let's say
plain vanilla
aspects of it.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of why it's good. And you can't underestimate how important that is for financial institutions.
Well, I would, there's got to be, it helps to keep that. Now I'm getting your analogy with oil. It helps to lubricate the financial system.
Right. It keeps everything going. And, but now here's just to get into, you know, where it's used and why it's used, is there's really two aspects of the repo market. The first aspect is that it's a place for large institutional investors to invest their very short-term cash.
Okay.
So if you look at any big money fund, any big corporation, they're always going to have a little bit of cash on hand. And, you know, and a little bit to me is probably a lot different to a, you know, Microsoft Corporation, which probably has tens of billions of dollars of cash on hand.
Yeah, they may be Microsoft, but they've got macro cash.
Right, exactly. Great one. So pretty much when all these institutions have that extra cash, now they can, imagine you're going to take $10 billion and deposit it in a bank deposit overnight. Well, you know, then you have to think about the bank and the deposit. But instead, what if you deposit it at a investment bank, but you get a U.S. government security to hold as collateral?
That's nice.
So you could take your cash, And you get a U.S. Treasury security to hold as collateral overnight or a week. So it's a very, very safe transaction for a large institution.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Scott, because this is where David's learning part for my listeners here. This is very interesting. So in that transaction, you just use as an example, who gets the interest on the Treasury bond or note or whatever is being used as collateral?
The owner does.
Okay, so the one who's using it, who is giving it as collateral, so if I borrow $10 billion from you and I give you a 10-year Treasury note, I still get the interest on that. So my net borrowing cost of the cash is going to be whatever you charge me in excess of the interest I'm earning on that Treasury note.
Right, exactly. So let's say that you're a portfolio manager. And you're leveraging yourself by borrowing money in the repo market to buy more security.
I got you.
And, you know, let's say that you have a U.S. Treasury that pays a 2% coupon, and you can borrow money in the repo market at 15 basis points, let's say, overnight. So, you know, the next day, you've earned 2% on your Treasury security.
I got you.
You've paid 15 basis points. You know, you've got what they call positive carry of 185 basis points each day. So
I can live with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Our listeners are indulging me in a little bit of the details here. What are some of the practical implications of these vehicles, Scott, for everyday people?
Okay, so for everyday people, and that really gets back to your introduction, is that that's kind of why Main Street doesn't know too much about the repo market, is because it's very much a large institutional market. You know, it's the major corporations, it's state and local governments that invest their cash. It's large money market funds that have overnight cash to invest that are basically in the repo market. It really doesn't filter down to the individual investor.
Well, it doesn't filter down until we have an MF Global.
Right.
And I want to get into that. And I know that you are very well informed and can share more with us about that. Let's grab a quick break and come right back with Scott. And we'll talk more about not only the repos, but also we'll talk more about some of these things and how they affect everyday people. Stay right there.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back. Hey, we've got Scott Skirm on the line with us, author of two books that, and we're going to get to one of them. He's author of Rogue Traders, and he's also author of The Money News, John Corzine and the Collapse of MF Global. And that's where we're going to head next here, Scott, is you know, we got into a little bit of a detailed discussion, and part of it born out of my own personal curiosity. I like to connect dots in my head of the things I know and things that I don't know that I know, and that was helpful. Now we're going to talk about some of the practical implications. How does this affect everyday people? And of course, you're very, very tuned into what happened at MF Global because you wrote the book about it, The Money News, and that's where we see a great example of how this repo market thing that a lot of people are not familiar with, how it literally or almost literally took, you know, what repossessed people's cars. I mean, it really hit them financially. So use that maybe as an example to kind of show the implications.
Well, you know, it's, you know, interesting here is that the repo market in general doesn't really hit the headlines in the newspapers, and that's usually the financial newspapers, unless there's some type of crisis. So when Bear Stearns went under, people were talking about short-term repo loans. When Lehman Brothers went under, and a host of a lot of other financial institutions that went bankrupt since the financial crisis began back 5-6 years ago. So here's the thing. So with the repo market too, and here's an interesting anecdote. I used to joke around with people in the newspaper because a lot of the time the financial press will often call me for quotes on what's going on in the repo market. And I used to joke around with them. Oh, okay. It's the time of year where I get called, because basically about once a year there is always some interest in the repo market because something bad was happening with a financial institution and someone was going bankrupt. And so pretty much when you see the repo market in the press, or when the person on Main Street, the regular listener, the regular person investing their money hears about the repo market, it's usually about some institution going bankrupt, and or a bank or something like that. And here's the principle that's going on there, is that there's a lot of criticism out there by, let's say, Fed governors, by government officials, that a lot of the banks were relying too much on repo funding to fund their assets. So David, if we go back to our discussion earlier, when I said, okay, there's a U.S. Treasury security, you know, maybe it could be a corporate bond or a mortgage-backed security, and the banks were giving those securities to cash investors on an overnight or one-week basis. So that's kind of been the problem during the financial crisis and since, was that a lot of these companies, Bear Stearns and Lehman and MF Global, were relying on very, very short-term funding in the repo market to basically borrow money to fund the securities that they owned.
So they were borrowing very, very short to go long and make money on the spread.
Exactly. You know, kind of that traditional banking function.
Mm-hmm.
Borrow at 3, lend at 6, on the golf course by 3. So 6-3.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
I know a few bankers that like to be on the golf course.
Yeah. And so, you know, traditionally, you know, that's a typical bank function, but the difference is with the repo market, how it's evolved, it became a very large market, and what happened was as soon as there's a whiff of financial crisis or a whiff of a problem at a bank, the institutions, the Microsoft, let's say, as an example, or, you know, the major corporation, the money fund, start pulling their cash that they're giving to the banks immediately. So with Bear Stearns, had, for example, all their repo counterparties not pulled all the cash out from under them, they'd probably still be alive today. And so that goes, you know, when you see the headlines about the repo market in general in the press, it's because a lot of Fed officials don't like banks relying on this very short-term repo funding.
You know, Scott, that's a very, first of all, that's an excellent summary of how that works. And it's very interesting because as I'm thinking that through, you know, the mechanics there, that Microsoft or whoever it is that's making that cash available and holding that security as collateral, and obviously they're making money, but they get nervous. It's so short term. You mentioned it's, you know, maybe one day at a time, or it's, you know, a week long. So at the end of the week, my question is, how does that work, where they can literally pull the cash out? Is it basically that it continues to, where they continue to renew this on a week-to-week basis automatically, and then when one party says stop, the money just goes back? Or do they actually say, hey, we need a check, and we're going to send you over the securities? How automated or how easy is it for one side to effectuate that, I want to stop the deal?
A good percentage of the repo market is an overnight market.
Okay.
So that automatically rolls off the next day. And there's repo transactions that go for 1 week, 1 month, 3 months. But, you know, once you get out to about 3 months, that's the majority of the market. So, and a big majority of it is overnight. So it's very easy for the repo funding. It automatically disappears. And then if somebody doesn't renew it, all these banks just, they end up having nowhere to go.
Okay, there's a key point. Thank you. So Microsoft just says, we're not doing this anymore, and they don't have to touch the keyboard. They just kind of stand back up and say, okay, that's it. Let's keep our cash. And then the folks on the other end of that deal, you know, then they get their security back. And then, of course, if that security has fallen in value or whatever the case may be, then they're hit even harder.
Yeah, well, think of this. If, let's say you're a major corporation and you have tens of billions of dollars sitting at an investment bank. If you're worried about their credit, that the bank might go under, you pull your cash back and you're sitting on this cash and you might say, okay, I feel like there's a financial crisis going on. What am I going to buy? Well, I'm going to buy treasury bills, government securities, short-term, you know, very, very short-term government products. And you might even just sit on your cash and not lend it to anybody.
Right.
So, you know, that's just like the natural part of the financial markets. You know, when there's a crisis brewing, people take their cash out of banks. And in a way, it's, you know, just like, you know, the lines outside of banks in the 1930s, where individual investor or individual people used to line up to get their deposits back. Well, you know, the modern day run on the bank is really large institutions pulling their repo funding from the bank.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that with that, then the institution, the bank that needed the cash, they then have that security that they then have to sell, you know, to get come up with cash. They've then got to sell it on the open market, and it may be a very bad time for them. This is where you can have this implosion that, you know, can be a cascade effect.
You know, David, you just hit on one of the other topics of discussion related to the repo market and the Federal Reserve that hits the press every once in a while is what they call fire sales.
All right, well, hold right there, Scott. We'll come back and talk about that. That's excellent. Scott is our guest today, Scott Skirm, and he is the author of Rogue Traders and The Money Noose, and excellent, excellent stuff. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
All right, we are back with Scott Skirm, the repo man. Hauling my car off, Scott. Don't do that. No, we're talking about repurchase agreements and how this is the oil that lubricates our financial system. And I think that it's just fascinating. And, you know, we talked about the impact and how these vehicles are used. And Scott, you brought up another topic that I think is excellent for us to get to, and that's about the Federal Reserve and how the repo market is related, or how we look at it alongside that. And I guess there's even been talk about, you know, how the repo market really might even be integrated into how Federal Reserve, how things are done. And so let's get into that. I'm curious about that, because I know that a lot of talk historically has been looking at the federal funds rate as a kind of a rate for policy setting. But with what you've described as this emergence of this very large repo market, I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't squeeze out maybe the federal funds rate. Where would banks go to these other institutions with a repurchase agreement in lieu of borrowing money from the Fed?
Well, so interesting. So let's take it where we left off when we mentioned fire sale, because that's basically kind of a big topic right now, and that really answers your question in a way. So that, you know, let's assume that there is a crisis brewing, and a institution, like let's say it was Bear Stearns, just lost their repo funding. You know, that their cash investors, the corporations, the money funds decided we're not going to do repo transactions with you. And as you pointed out, then someone like the Bear Stearns has all these securities that they've got to sell, or they've got to find someone else to fund them. But let's say that nobody's going to lend money to fund them, so then the Bear Stearns has to sell those securities. So what happens then is they sell the securities, it drives prices lower, and then there's other banks out there that are leveraged. Mm-hmm. And when Bear Stearns is forced to sell, then the securities of all those other banks, the prices of those drop also. And then some of those might be forced to sell. So it's kind of like a downward spiral. And that's really one of the things that the Fed's been concerned about since the financial crisis is that there's been fire sales, so that, you know, because of banks have been forced to sell, it spreads to other institutions. And nobody wants that in the economy. So getting to your question is, you know, the Federal Reserve is kind of caught in a dilemma.
Yeah.
You know, what do they do to try to prevent fire sale?
That's an excellent question. And because the overnight or the federal fund rate is right now, you know, it's between 0 1/4 of 1%, 25 basis points. If a bank can get it at, as you used earlier, the example, 0.15, you know, that's a significant difference in a cost reduction. So there's obviously an incentive for these institutions to borrow money from, you know, somebody besides the Fed.
Right, and that's actually what had been happening the last few years, is that, and that's kind of what theoretically is supposed to happen when the Federal Reserve cuts rates down to close to zero or to really low rates, supposed to funding. Banks and institutions go out and they buy assets. Asset prices decline. Then on top of that, you have the Federal Reserve and the quantitative easing out there in the market buying securities, buying bonds themselves. So that's supposed to be what happens, is that, you know, it brings rates much lower.
I'm getting my mind around it. It's very interesting. So is there a place for the going rate of what these repurchase agreements, the repo rates, are being charged by the institutions to the bank, and how that might be? Can that go be used in a way like the federal fund rate, or is there any talk of that being part of the being a rate that's used and, you know, kind of as a benchmark rate?
And actually, this is actually very current news, David. Back about 6 months or so ago, or maybe even 9 months ago, the Fed started talking about the fact that the federal funds market is not as large a market as it used to be. And the Fed funds market is basically a borrowing and lending cash in between banks in the U.S., whereas the repo market is a overnight market of borrowing and lending cash and securities between banks, financial institutions, corporations, all sorts of different entities. So the federal funds market has declined significantly the last few years, and the federal funds rate has always been the rate that the Federal Reserve uses to target short-term rates. You know, it sets a rate for the federal funds rate, or a range for the federal funds rate, and that's, you know, one of its targets for monetary policy. That's one of its monetary policy tools. Now, with the decline of the Fed funds rate, or the usage in the market, there was talk that the Fed might move to target a repo rate. In other words, the overnight repo rate might be the new rate targeted by the Fed.
I got
you. And Fed Chairman Janet Yellen mentioned that the Fed was looking at that in January, but the last two FOMC minutes that were released, one just a couple days ago and the other one a month or so ago, had indicated that the Fed has decided to stick with the federal funds rate and not target the repo rate.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Scott, it's fascinating stuff, and it's very interesting how all this is playing out. And for more, I'll direct my listeners to The Money Noose and also to Rogue Traders, which is also a fascinating book. Scott Skirm is our guest, and the website is scottskirm.com. Scott, loved having you on again. We'll do it again.
Thank you, David. Anytime.
All right.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.